Welcome to another edition of The Catalyst Effect. I am your host, Natasha Waddell, and we are here to bring you another exciting episode that not only entertains you, but also informs you of critical things that you need to know, and as well shares a message that you didn't know you needed. Today, we are getting ready for Financial Literacy Month, which is in the month of April, and we have with us Mr. Jonathan Munyon from the Guyana American Merchant Bank, but even better, son of the soil from Guyana. He's an expert in finance, I would say. He will tell you if he is or is not afterwards once he introduces himself. But I think that he is to be the head of investment at the bank. And he's also very passionate, not only about banking, but helping others do finance the right way. So we're going to get into another exciting episode. Before we do so, we must thank those persons who have made this possible. Today, this episode is being shot at Aden by Best Western in Guyana, one of our newest hotels. So if you're looking for a place to stay, you know where to check out. And it has the most scenic views, as well as good food and good cocktails. We also need to thank Express Business Solutions, The Rehab Center Inc., Achazia Business Solutions Limited, Alpha Creations Media, Adam Lord Cinematography, Color Me Gorgeous, AV's Beauty and Hair Salon. Thank you for making this possible and helping us to create impact. Jonathan, welcome, and thank you for sharing some time with us.
Well, no. First off, thank you for the invite, and really glad to be here. Let's set something for the record. I don't consider myself an expert by any means, but I am proud to be from the soil and proud to actually recently move back home.
Great. So you have returned at this momentous time in Guyana when we are going through a critical growth stage in the country. When we are older, we'll remember what Guyana was. The people who are now being born will think that this has been Guyana all along, and that's actually a good thing. So it's good that while a lot of people are moving away from Guyana, some of us are coming back to make sure we help in the developmental stages.
Yeah, and that was exactly it. I mean, when I was back in high school here, QC, by the way, need to rep where I came from. And I got a liking to, business and economics versus science and arts. And, when I figured out what I wanted to study, as I was actually studying that, I realized what can bring me home. Like, where can I work in this industry? What can I do in this industry? What skills do I need to come back and, be a bit more productive? And, at the time, less much more than now, there wasn't a lot of, financial jobs in Guyana. The most that people knew about banks is that, if you want a loan, you can go there. Some of them didn't even deposit their money or kept their money there. It was all, under the mattress,
yes.
Right? But, like you correctly said, given that the evolution that we've been having here, not just, in our financial markets, but in every part of the economy, why not be a part of that evolution? Why not be a part of the boom? Be an agent to help the change instead of, no disrespect to anyone that hasn't been, heeding the call to come back. But I wanted to personally be one of the, first in my field to come back and, lend a hand and help anywhere I can.
And that is commendable at a time when it is necessary, because with the boom that's happening in business, we definitely need to understand how money works. To have sustainable businesses, you have to have at least some knowledge of how money works. You have to have financial literacy. And coming up, this is an entire month where we should be, if you didn't know certain things about finance before, at least this month we should be drilling it into your heads a little, because where we are, It is a time where we need to learn fast, adapt quickly, and make changes, because time is not like it was a long time ago. By tomorrow or next week, the business dynamics will change again.
Yeah, I've seen such a rapid pace. And to your earlier point about, the financial literacy of it all and actually, being able to bring that knowledge here, surprisingly or not, we are not behind the global economy in this. Only as recently as, I believe, don't quote me, about maybe 5 years now, the Canadian high school system has only recently gotten more financial literacy courses for, you know, their students. You know, it's been a global push as of recent to kind of have even the high schoolers to get a bit more exposure of, you know, what is taxes, what is simple saving, like, you know, what an interest rate is, you know, what is compound interest. Just even that basic knowledge does really help you to make, you know, a little bit more sounder decisions about your money, something that's very important to everyone. At least I hope.
A lot of us just work, earn, and spend.
Yeah. I mean, yes. I'm also guilty of that. But like anything else that's good in this life, there's disciplines to things. And as much as I encourage everyone to enjoy their hard-earned money, you know, save some of it.
Yes, we should. So before we get into the financial literacy aspect of this, we're going to get into Jonathan. Tell us a little bit about this guy. Who's Jonathan?
You know, this guy here. I don't know. What should I say? I was born and mostly raised in Guyana. I did my nursery school, which sadly, nursery and primary school, sadly burned down. I went to Mace. That was actually a very somber thing to witness just recently, as 3 weeks ago. But I went to, as I mentioned, QC, my alma mater, G House, for anyone else watching, you know, need to represent that. And then it was after then I chose to do my further my academic studies in Toronto. A lot of my family, they do live in Canada, and for me, that was also a home away from home. So I guess that, you know, there are certain advantages of studying there versus the U.S. or even, like, staying at University of Guyana, or, you know, at that time, there was other schools that were offering programs that people are, you know, enrolled in today and have gotten very strong over the course of the last 12 years. But, you know, I wanted to also break away, get world experience, be a bit independent of my parents, and just find my own, you know, learn what I liked and what I didn't like, and just, you know, experience a bit of life, I guess, first. I did an undergrad at Ryerson University, economics and finance. That was that was something that really interested me. I looked at a lot of movies like Wall Street and, you know, The Big Short. And I don't know if that is the, or if that should be the standard for which you aspire to, but it definitely helped to get me into the mood.
You don't want to hear what my movies that aspire me. I'm pretty sure they'd come looking for me afterwards, so let's not talk about
that. Okay, I was going to ask for one. But, yeah, no, that's kind of what got me into the industry, and I spent about 8 to 9 years working there at RBC, actually, various roles from, you know, fund accounting to, you know, valuations, pricing of financial securities. I kind of worked on a lot of different teams, a lot of different projects, not just Toronto. My latest team through RBC took me to London for a bit, actually, which I actually found very similar to back home, language for something, like a lot of terms that they use their, you know, toilet or lavatories, serviettes, stuff like that. It's like language that my grandparents and stuff would use. And it's kind of funny to see where, like, all the, you know, quote unquote, colonialism and the terms and stuff, and like what the heritage actually, our heritage came from and how it evolved. But yeah, you know, I really enjoyed working, and, you know, I made it to certain points, and I achieved a lot of the goals that I wanted to achieve with the help of a lot of support, family, friends, everyone. But in that time, Guyana has always been a calling. You know, my family, my parents, my two brothers, they still live here. A lot of my, you know, close friends are still here. And one morning I just kind of woke up and I realized that I think it's time that I should move back.
Being away from Guyana for so long, well, I know you did travel back and forth, but coming back home to live, to pay it forward, what was something you were very excited to eat? Food.
Well, the best thing about that is I actually didn't know to cook when I leave. I learned out of just being very hungry and not wanting to pay for food all the time because that gets expensive. But, you know, you can't beat your mom's chicken curry, right? And I know you spent some time in Trinidad, so I'm not even going to touch what you call it now.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, definitely that. Just any and every fruits. Fruits taste so much better here. You can definitely, you know, the term farm to table, it doesn't exist here because we just take that for granted. But like in the North American world, that is a branded concept. That is such a important priced up thing. And we, as Guyanese, are actually very lucky to actually have access to things like that. You know, fresh foods, vegetables. You know, non-preservatives in most of our foods or meat, you know, are probably killed the week before we eat them. You know, so just general fresh food and healthy food, that was something that tastes so much better, and you always taste the difference when you have food here versus like elsewhere.
Yes, and your mother's home cooking just cannot be beat.
I try, but I learned not to compete. Yes, just...
And what are some things that you've experienced that, or things that you have done since you've been back that you didn't have or couldn't have experienced while you were either traveling back and forth or when you were living here earlier on?
Commuting in morning and afternoon traffic. Never. Definitely, it's a new experience here. I feel as home. The commute is definitely a big part of my routine now. That as when I vacationed here all these years. You know, something that never really existed, but, you know, in a way, I'm kind of glad that that exists because it just goes to show how many more people are affording cars, how many more people are, you know, more self-reliant and can take a little bit more control of their own routine and a lot more people with, you know, jobs and, you know, all of this as we would think of it as, you know, oh boy, this is stress. It's actually really good economic indicators for this city. Or the country in general.
Yes, it is. And we have to get accustomed to it because we think we have traffic here until you go somewhere else. When I was in Texas, we had to sit in traffic very quietly for about an hour and a half to get 15 minutes away. And I was these are four-lane roads on both sides. And nobody has to... What are you going to do? Honking the horn is probably going to get you shot. So you might as well just sit down.
Yeah. Well... I mean, I feel your pain. I remember, you know, driving in Toronto now, like I always use Google Maps just because, not because I don't know the way to get to somewhere, but the ETA and the fastest route that they can project for you. And I remember one time the ETA was like 40 minutes to get home and something happened and it turned into an hour and 40 minutes. And I was just like, yeah. If I was back home in Guyana, I would be home in 5 minutes.
Yes, and we've got to get accustomed to the traffic because it's only going to get worse, but it's, as you said, a good indicator of where we are actually heading, and it actually forces us to do more development in terms of infrastructure so that we create other routes to get to, multiple routes to get to the same location so you don't always have the bottleneck of traffic in the known areas.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've already been I've seen those you know, additional routes being, you know, constructed as we speak. But you know, they say that, you know, things are gonna get a little bit worse before they get better, and that goes in any aspect of any project, right? So you know, I am very encouraged to see all the new highways and all the cutouts and, you know, streets that I grew up where it was just like barely enough for one car, but it was a two-way and there was like huge trenches, and now there's like four-lane roads.
Yes, to develop, to build, you have to break. Yep. And Guyana is going to be on the construction for, I'd average, the next 5 to 10 years to get us to where we need to go. So we need to be patient. We need to even longer too. We need to add help, see where we can help, like what you're doing, see where we can help with this development. But we are in a critical developmental stage, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a year or even 5 years. It's going to be longer because there is so much that has to be done. It takes time. It takes talent. It takes money. It takes vision. and it require, and we have something good, something great that's going to happen, and mm-hmm. we're witnessing it from the ground up. Yep. So we need to be patient and just allow it to happen. Yes, it's going to inconvenience us a lot. A lot of the things are new. We're breaking out of norms. Mm-hmm. So we have to just be patient with it.
Yeah, no, like patient is a virtue, but I look at it as, you know, our part in the, you know, the private contractors are doing their part, you know, the government's doing their part. So, you know, everyone's trying to, you know, be a part of the change and the movement. And, you know, even if you're not directly involved in it, I like to look at it as I'll be patient in this line and, you know, sit quietly and do my part that way.
And I think we need to emphasize that part. Just be patient in the line. As I was driving down the road today, there was an obstruction, like two or three cars ahead. The car in front of me just swerved and went into the other lane. And I'm like, you know, Guyana doesn't like to go through the process. We just like to go to the shortcut. Like, you have to go through the process. When there's something in your path, sometimes you just have to wait it out and go through. Every time you swerve, you inconvenience another person. One, you put yourself at risk on the road of an accident, because a lot of times I know y'all don't check y'all side mirrors. And also, in just a general growth context, you're robbing yourself of an opportunity to just see what was that thing up ahead that actually caused it. And a lot of times it was either a passenger going, a pedestrian crossing the road, or there was just something that if you had waited 2 minutes more or 1 minute more, your path would have been cleared.
Like I said, patience is a virtue. But yeah, no, look, I've experienced that myself, and you know, I could only hope that everyone does keep in mind that, you know, maybe that car was in a hurry for a good reason, but, you know, keep in mind that if you're doing these things, at least be safe about it. You know, make sure that there isn't a pedestrian and, you know, trying to cross the road when you're trying to cut on the other side or things like that. Because, you know, let's be honest, we're not going to stop that type of behavior, but at least
just like that.
But, you know, at least if we're a little bit more cognizant about everything else around us, we might be a little bit more cautious in what we do.
Yeah. And we didn't get on here to speak about road safety or uses of the road. But as we got on the topic, it's just a matter of everybody's time is valuable. Sometimes I feel like when you cut out and when you do a buildup, mm-hmm. because you're using the shoulders of the road instead of staying in the line, or you're overtaking or undertaking or doing the most, it's almost as if where you need to go is not as important as the 15 other vehicles in front of you. And everybody's time is just as valuable. We understand we needed to get somewhere. Maybe manage your time a little bit better so you don't have to be rushing and always be aggressive when you're on the road, because at the end of the day, it takes about 1 second for something to go wrong. Lives can be lost. You put yourself at risk of an accident, and so mm-hmm. many other things happen. So as things are happening, it's like just realize that everybody has somewhere to go, but we just need to not bully or think that our time is more valuable than the other driver's time.
Yeah, no, time is valuable. And like us bankers like to say, time is money.
It is. Yes. Now, we're getting into the money talk. We're going to start with...
See what I did there?
You're the guy who brings things back. Yes, yes, yes. We had a couple of conversations the other night, and yeah, I tend to stray. He brings it back.
Perfect symbiosis, man.
Yes. All right, so why is financial literacy even critical? Why should we care about learning about finance, or what is financial literacy?
Well, the why of it all... Not to sound like if I'm generalizing, but like in this life, money is very important to, you know, getting certain things done, you know, paying your rent, your mortgage, or feeding your household. And there is a certain level of financial literacy, a little bit beyond just, you know, money comes in and then money comes out, right? And one thing that is, I think, much more important on a forward-looking basis is, like we alluded to earlier, saving some of that money. And again, where Guyana is going right now, there's something that myself and others have been beginning to see, which is a very beautiful thing. It is the emergence of a middle class. For, you know, growing up, as far as I could remember, and for a long time even before that, you know, there's always more, you know, working class people and then just entrepreneurs. and there wasn't really a lot in between. And that disparity was huge. Now we see there's a lot more of, again, that middle class that's emerging, a lot more career-oriented, educated workforce that are, you know, have the quote-unquote office jobs. We have a lot more professionals, you know, whether it's whatever the field is, engineers, accountants, lawyers, you know, bankers, everything under the sun, there's a lot more emergence in these type of careers versus, you know, just, you know, like, you know, being a hustler or just like having a business, right?
Yes.
And the biggest important thing about that is, well, when you're not an entrepreneur and you don't have, you know, business assets working for you and you're earning a salary, what you have to remember is that, you know, again, it's very important to save and invest your savings as well. Now, why I think that's important is that in one of the unintended effects of emerging economies is that, you know, you tend to experience some inflation. You know, things are going to get a little bit more expensive. Things for retirement is going to be a little bit more of a planned event versus let's just see what happens, right? So saving for your retirement, saving for, you know, your having a family and your kids' education. You know, we saw the other day that UG is now free, which is, you know, amazing and a really good step forward to build, you know, further literacy beyond high school. But it, again, coming back to this notion of savings and investing, you know, you want to make your hard-earned money last, work for you, and be there for emergencies.
And what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions that persons have that makes them just not pay attention to financial literacy or how money truly works?
I think a big portion of that is going back to where we came from as a younger society. It wasn't really something of importance just because most people, you know, didn't even really have bank accounts. Like, they spend their money as it came in. Barter was a lot more common back then as well. And this is not even that much long ago. This was, you know, when I was a kid, right? I don't know, but maybe last year. But, you know, I think it was just not a very present thing, the general banking systems and, like, having that need for financial literacy. You know, I mentioned at you know, the conference last week that traditionally a lot of business owners did very simple to no bookkeeping at all. And what came with that was, you know, no filing of taxes sometimes, mostly filing of taxes, not having the bank accounts, not even having a properly registered business. And these things do require some financial literacy skills. Or, you know, it requires you to know what a loan is and, like, what is this interest rate? Like, you know, some people just think that it's this number that you pay, but it's really, truly understanding how that number affects you and how it affects you versus the cost of living and the cost of, you know, owning a car and stuff like that. So there's a lot of dimensions to that. It's not an easy thing to unpack and, like, you know, list out. But I would say that, you know, then to now, like, it just wasn't present back then.
Where we're going, we definitely need to learn it and learn it fast. So at the beginning, because we know some people might say, oh, I don't want to listen to financial literacy as a podcast next.
Yeah.
What would you say just at the very beginning of it all to encourage somebody to continue watching as to how this knowledge can benefit your business? Because we do share our content mainly for business owners, for them to position their businesses the right way. So how can this information truly help to benefit your business to allow for growth?
Well, no matter what size you are, what business size you are, whether you're a smaller, medium to larger business, yes, you may or may not have accountants working with you, but as a smaller to medium business size owner, like, I encourage to learn as much as you can about any sort of financial literacy, because let's say, for example, you're a smaller business that's doing well, and you want to expand, you want to maybe, you know, buy the property you've been renting, you know, so you're trading an expense for an asset, or you want to buy a second property to expand your production so your production is actually cheaper, you know, economies of scale and all that stuff. And you may have a great business with a great business model, tons of demand, you know, good skills, staff, and even reputation. But if you're a bit lacking in that financial literacy space, which means that maybe you may not be taking advantage of certain, you know, credit facilities at your bank, or you may not be doing your paperwork correctly. You may not be listing your assets and liabilities and your filings and all that stuff correctly. That can hurt you for the expansion, because a lot of the times you're not, especially with, again, inflation and real estate prices of where they've been and the cost of materials to construct, you know, your next manufacturing site or whatever your business may be, you're going to need a bank's help. And as we evolve in our financial system, you know, we have to do things by the book, and, you know, that only comes from transparency and a place of trust and on your side, and that translates into how we can help you as a bank. So I guess to bring it all together, how can it help you? You know, it helps you by being prepared and ready, having yourself in a great position to mobilize when you do have these goals to expand, or to even just get your business by. Like, you know, for example, I would think that during COVID, a lot of businesses here, you know, everyone would have suffered a little bit. And if you were not in such a position that you were able to go to the bank and say, hey, you know, can you give me a line of credit or a revolving sort of extension or something to get me through this hard times? Like, I could imagine a lot of businesses probably shut doors, or, like, you know, they had to maybe go to a private lender that's, you know, charging them a lot more than a bank would charge. So, you know, that's, I think, a prime example of, if you're not ready for what the unknown that could happen, good or bad, you know, that's the advantage of paying a little bit more attention to be, you know, more financially adept.
Okay, so what do you think, or what would you suggest are the top things that business owners, as from the entry level in terms of finance, what are some of the critical things that they should at least know or pay attention to, more so like budgeting and cash flow, cash and those things? What are some of the top things that they should know?
I think as a more of the medium to larger businesses would already kind of have that in practice, but I think it's more important for smaller business owners that are trying to get to that, you know, that middle stage, understand their cash flow. And essentially what that is, your cash flow is having enough money to do your day-to-day business with a little bit extra. And that's very important. Having facilities to help bridge that, having a good relationship with your bank to, you know, mitigate certain things. So, for example, you know, there's tons of Guyanese that are smaller to medium term sized businesses that are having contracts with these huge oil corporations. And, you know, as it's very traditional that in North America, that contract executions and, like, when you actually get paid from your time of completion, it's not right away. Like, sometimes it takes 2, 3, 4 months. And as a smaller business owner, sometimes that hurts you, right? You need your money now to operate.
Yes.
So, like, understanding your working cash flow and how to predict and anticipate your income and monies versus your payments that needs to go out. This is a big aspect of keeping your business flowing and operational. You know, not to shamelessly promote, but I mean, my parent bank, GBTI, like, we've recently launched a invoice financing, or as the world would know, we call it trade financing, where we're actually able to, if you have a contract with a tier one company such as Exxon, for example, you can bring your contract to us and we would actually give you 80% of that contract value up front. And that way you get your working capital faster.
Yes.
And again, in order to, and don't quote me, like there's a lot of, I wouldn't say a lot, but you know, that's anything else. There's things to qualify for these programs. But in general, in order to qualify for anything banking in Guyana, like again, it comes back to having prepared financials, no matter how big or small you are, you know, reviewed by an accredited accountant. It doesn't have to be a large expensive accountant. It just has to be someone that's accredited. And that's important just because an accredited accountant, when he puts his name on something, you have recourse. So if you go to, let's say, GRA, for example, and, you know, something doesn't add up and they're saying that, hey, you know, you owe or you're in breach of something and yes. it's something that that accountant did, you actually have recourse on that accountant.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's the second thing that's very important for businesses to do. And then I guess, you know, thirdly, be on time with your tax payments and all your liabilities. The credit bureau is a good example of an emerging credit system in Guyana. It's not perfect yet, but I'm glad that there is one that brings transparency, not just to businesses, but to yourself. You know, you can self-evaluate by looking at your own credit score, business or personal. So I think those are like four key tenets that, you know, not large and wide, but if you try to stick to those things, like it does go a long way.
Yes, and I think what is important for businesses to know is that in as it relates to accountants, mm-hmm. Your accountant should have your back. Your accountant should be keeping you accountable because with Express, mm-hmm. we have partnered with an accounting firm because we are the accountants. I don't really like numbers, though I'm about to go get into that field. But one thing that we have recognized over the last year is when we now consult with the accountants, we invite them to the meetings with the clients and mm-hmm. they say what has to get done, why it's important for these things to get done, and then they state the price. It's like, oh, I know somebody else who's going to do it. But then here's the risk that I've seen a lot. I know for a fact that your business is making a certain amount of money. We're seeing you on social media mm-hmm. promoting very hard. And then your accountant, who you think has your back, does a financial statement that says you only made $26,000 last year because you're trying to get off from paying back taxes or you're trying to get away from the late penalties or mm-hmm. you are trying to cheat the system, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. So you go away from the accredited or the auditing system where they will hold you accountable and ensure that from at least moving forward, you'll do things the right way. You mm-hmm. choose to go to that person who may be cheaper or give you your way, mm-hmm. but then they're not helping you. They're hurting you.
Well, if there's one thing, well, there was many things I took away from Regulations and Beyond Summit, but one thing that stuck with me, which, you know, it's amazing how simple but true it is. It says, and I can't remember who termed it, but it'll cost you a lot more in the long run to not be compliant than it will cost you to be compliant.
Yes, and that's correct. So it's difficult. It's difficult to come up with that money sometimes when you're just not prepared because mm-hmm. you didn't know or you were just not preparing or the business wasn't in a place. Mm-hmm. But once you go over the first hurdle, you pay to learn.
Yep.
That's the reality. You're paying to learn and then you know moving forward what you have to do. So we actually, when you want to do certain financial transactions with us, if you're mm-hmm. not going through our accountant, mm-hmm. who will hold you accountable, mm-hmm. we prefer not to do business with you because we don't know who you are going to and we're not putting our name mm-hmm. at risk because you're going to somebody who's going to cheat the system or tweak the books the way you want the books to look. And then, you know, you're going to have a compliance certificate, but a non-compliant business. And we have decided that we're just not taking that route. So we only serve people who want to do business and accounting the right way.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, trust and transparency is what we as bankers and I think, well, anyone that wants to do business with people look at. And really and truly, that comes with being truly compliant. You know, and, you know, to play not devil's advocate, but like I do understand that, you know, yes, it's a hard world out there and, you know, sometimes, yes, you are going to try and, you know, everyone should try to save a dollar somewhere here or there. And I guess this could be a call to action for, you know, some accountants to, like, you know, develop, you know, different tiers of services. One thing I had suggested to a friend of mine who's an accountant, I'm like, well, you know, have you ever thought about, because he was trying to look for new business and new clienteles, because all of the larger businesses already have their accountants lined up.
Yes.
And what I suggested to him was that, well, here's what, why don't you do this? Why don't you go to some businesses that you know that are definitely not doing proper accounting and, you know, tends to be a lot more cash or intensive businesses that it's just hard to do those accounting, and try to offer some sort of hybrid service. Be like, hey, you know, like, why don't, you know, we have some kind of barter here, or why don't you guys every month just put these together, maybe total these up, have this package ready for me, and I'll do 5% of the work, you do 95% of the work, and I'll charge you this, you know, smaller fee. That way, yes, you're going to get, it's a win-win, whereas, like, the businesses get to be compliant, and they get a bit exposed at the same time into, you know, compiling these expense statements. And after a while, there'll be, they might even pick up a lot more than they think they will.
That's correct. I've learned a lot of the accounting things that I know by having to be that middle person between the accountants and the clients, and mm-hmm. simply having the accountant do my own mm-hmm. accounts for me, or calling them because somebody mentioned something financial that I had no clue what they were speaking about. So being around them, having, I think they say in business, you should have an accountant, a lawyer, somebody who's committed a crime, a banker.
Okay, let's back up. Someone that what?
So you know what not to do.
Oh, okay, okay.
that is why, yes.
Okay, you know just what not checking. To
do. You should have at least, there, you should have certain things. An accountant should be your best friend, because numbers and tell the stories that we want to know and need to know in order to grow. And trust me, I paid a very ugly, hefty, nasty price for not knowing better.
Yeah.
I basically lost my business. I sunk deep into debt because I thought I knew how to manage money, and I thought that, oh, the business was making money, but what I wasn't doing was preparing for if something went wrong, and things mm-hmm. went wrong.
Yeah, and which is why I, you know, the first thing I said was, hey, you know, you have to put aside and save even in business. You know, there's a term that generally we use in Canada, when we're evaluating a little bit larger companies, when we see they have a little bit of savings, and we go, so is this a war chest or an emergency fund, right? Because a lot of the times when companies are ready to go and expand, you know, they put aside, and you see it on their balance sheets, and, like, you know, the question we always ask ourselves, or, you know, me and my colleagues, we're like, all right, so what are we betting on, war chest or emergency fund? But it just goes to show that every and anyone, they do pay attention to these things in practice.
Correct. So that's why I'm also passionate now about sharing the information mm-hmm. with people, because you don't want to have to figure it out the way I am still doing, because you have to understand how the money truly works to get out of debt too. Getting out of debt is one of the hardest things, because it seems that sometimes because you've gotten yourself there, mm-hmm. everything works against you to keep you there.
I mean,
but it's just a lesson to understand how money works. And now once you get out, at least for me, I want to teach people how to manage so mm-hmm. that you don't end up in that space, and you're better able to manage what you're doing. You're able to see how the money is coming in and going out. So mm-hmm. you are positioned, and with where we are going right now, I mean, just looking back at the scenic view at night, Guyana at night, looking at where we are, it takes money to develop and experience and enjoy everything that's about to happen here.
Yeah, no, that's you know, you kind of hit it on the nail there, and you know, being able to manage, like, even your own, you know, your own money. One great example that, you know, I always try to tell people is your credit card. Like, it's really important to pay your credit card on time, because, you know, when I first got my credit card too, as someone in the industry, you know, they say, do what we say, not what we do. I understood the meaning of that term, because, you know, my first credit card, you know, for 2 months, maybe I didn't touch it. And then, you know, I went on a trip with my friends, and I came back and spent a lot more than I needed to spend. And without having that discipline of using a credit card correctly, you know, I spent a couple of months after that, like, cutting from, you know, even doing some groceries. I found myself going by my aunt, you know, a couple of days a week to eat some food because I'm like, I got to pay back this credit card. Yeah. And it's very easy to get carried away with debt when everything is, like, credit is so easily out there, I guess. And yes, more in a first world country than an emerging economy like Guyana, but I mean, we are getting there. And yes, I would love to see Guyanese people, you know, learn the lessons that we've learned, you know, in more of a first world country and be ahead of that before, you know, they get stuck behind that eight ball. You know, there's so much more businesses now that takes credit cards. And I know it sounds naive, but, like, you know, before, everywhere in Guyana, it was just cash only. And yes, now I actually feel so nice. I hardly walk with a lot of cash on me. Everywhere takes my credit card. And you know, with that, it'll eventually become, and, you know, with the emerging middle class and everything like that too, it'll eventually become a lot more cashless of a society. And with that comes, you know, credit cards. So yes, preparing that general economy and the people to, you know, be aware of money management and how the interest rates add up to what you owe and stuff like that, it is important to at least have the financial awareness about it.
Yes. Earlier we mentioned I mentioned four or five things that you should have in business, banker being one of them.
Yeah.
I think now that I'm no longer considered a bank an enemy, because I understand that they're really there as a friend. And more so, what I understand is that the banking is a relationship just like any other relationship. That one, you have to do some groundwork to get to know who you're getting into bed with.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to manage that relationship. You have to communicate. You have mm-hmm. to be honest. Mm-hmm. You can seek advice. They will call you and check and see how you're doing.
Yep.
But there is still a big misconception when it comes to banking. People still fear banking or think, oh, you're asking for too much information. Why do you want to get into my business? Why must I be, you know, mm-hmm. why do you want all these things? And why is it that I can't qualify for so much and I make so much money?
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, that money isn't banked at the bank that you're asking for their money.
Yeah.
You make so much money. This document that your accountant, more than likely not an accredited accountant who did numbers up, mm-hmm. is going to show that, oh, I make $20 million. This is the narrative that they come and then they say, oh, the bank don't lend you money.
Yeah.
A lot of times what I realize is that you didn't develop a relationship with the bank and it's your first time and you expect, you know, it's like the hot girls that get all cute. You don't know them, but they think you're supposed to take them to Amici on the first date.
No comment there. No comment there.
Right.
So I do prefer taking them to Aiden, to be fair.
Well, yeah. Well, on the first date, though, I mean, you don't know somebody and you're going to go invest in them that amount of money.
Well, let's not talk about my dating life right now.
Well, that is how I break it down sometimes, because you don't know this person and you're going to go spend a bag on them on the first date. I personally believe first date should be ice cream or coffee dates.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get to know you a little bit before I go spend in a bag.
No, you know what? It's a perfect analogy
of what banking is. Sometimes you got to start with a small loan rather than mm-hmm. you want $20 million from the bank. And especially where we don't have credit history is now something mm-hmm. very new to Guyana. They don't know what you can do with your credit because there usually is none. Your money been in your mattress for the last 5 years.
Yeah, no. You're very spot on. Like before I get into it, like there was you know, friend of a friend. You know, everyone that I've been touching base with since I've been back, and you know, friends of their friends. As soon as they hear that, you know, I work at the Merchant Bank, which is, you know, our parent company is UBTI, so we work and we operate within the Kingston branch.
Yes.
You know, first thing they ask me is like, oh, well, can I get a loan? Like, you know, what do you need? And, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And one person, I love to say his name, but obviously I won't. But, you know, he was just like, oh, yeah, I can get you a job letter, you know, stating that I make X amount. Like, you must give me a loan for that. And I go, well, you got to show us the pay stubs. And then right away the conversation was, well, yeah, but that's a little bit personal. I'm like, well, you know, for us putting trust in you to lend you this sum of money, like that is, if you think about it, a little, we need to know you a little bit personally, right? Yes. And then it's like you said, it's the dating game. It's getting to come in and build your credit. And, you know, even if it starts with a credit card and a payment, even if your primary bank is somewhere else and, you know, you have a relationship with another bank, like, you know, you have a savings account there, you have a checking account there, you take out a credit card, very small limit, you build that credit, you use the card for maybe, you know, maybe you have one credit card and you say, okay, this credit card at Bank X will be my travel card. Any travel, I'll pay for it on this card. And that way, you know, you're not using it every day to build it up, and you have a specific use for it. And I like to use travel because it's not an everyday thing that you do. So it's something that you definitely have to plan and budget for.
Yes.
So I like to use that example when it comes to traveling and using a credit card to build your credit. And that's just one of the many ways and examples that you can do.
Yeah, so I think get into dating a little bit more, dating your banks, understanding who the bank is, understanding what they have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to understanding finance first, because I think if you understand finance a lot more, you'll understand the benefits of the bank, the benefits of a credit line, the benefits of debt.
Yeah, no, Doug, there is a lot of benefit in debt.
Yes.
I think, you know, at Relations and Beyond Summit, someone, I did mention that, and someone in the audience asked me, well, can you tell me some of the benefits of it? And I was actually so glad that they asked that, because a lot of people don't know, and goes back to a relationship, if you have an accountant or not, that accountant would be able to tell you that, hey, the interest you pay on your debt is actually tax deductible, you know, which means like you actually have a little more money in the end of, in your net profit at the end of the day for your company by having a little healthy amount of debt. And for medium to larger businesses, like what's actually a misconception is that they think that, you know, all debt is bad. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people brag about, you know, financing this whole project cash only, and you know, it's all cash, I owe no one, and it creates a little bit of a little bit of an ego boost. And, you know, to be fair, sure, if you can afford that, that's good. But it, depending on your particular situation, that might be financial mismanagement, because you can put that cash to better use by, you know, leveraging a loan. And again, you know, the bookkeeping, accounting advantages that you enjoy, just such as the interest that you can write off, you know, those it's still advantageous. And then it goes back to your point about having that accountant to advise you that way.
Yes. So let's assume that our listeners don't know the definition of net profit, debt ratio, and interest.
Mm-hmm.
What are those, and why should they pay attention to them?
Well, your net profit would be the total profit that your company would earn after all expenses are deducted. Some people might conflate that with gross profit, which it is similar in the sense where it's a form of money left after certain operating or cost of goods expenses. And again, that depends on the type of your business. But it is a good reflection on a bank's point of view of how you manage your both expenses and revenues. I think the second one you mentioned was
the debt
to equity.
Ratio.
Yeah, so that is just a ratio that we look at to see the percentage of your company's assets that's financed by cash of the company or the owner versus bank debt. Each company, each industry is a bit different into, you know, what is more acceptable. There's heavy machine driven industries where, you know, it's a little bit more impossible to be more equity than debt, just because some of these machines are, you know, hundreds of thousands of US dollars. But then there's some businesses where, I guess, more retail or food or what's not, where it's actually a little bit more acceptable to have a little bit more equity than debt. So, you know, they're not terms to be black and white about. Again, everything revolves around your position and your business and your industry. And again, your accountant is the best person to tell you that, because if your accountant doesn't prepare you before you come to the bankers, we get the blame.
So that relationship with the accountant, we usually just talk to our accountants, you know, like that far off cousin that you speak to once in a while.
That's in sixth form. That's in sixth
So it's like the once a year when we know it's tax season.
Yeah.
That's the time we speak with the accountant, because we feel all year what we're doing is the thing to do. Mm-hmm. We just take the receipts and we give it to them. Well, in Guyana, tax date is April 30th. Mm-hmm. So we will be extra late and give it to them in March. And then we'll never speak to them again until next year, March. I think we have by now spoken to the importance of that relationship being a little bit more hands-on. Your accountant should be your friend. Your accountant should be somebody you speak to for financial advice. Mm-hmm. You're about to go do something. You need to speak to your accountant. A client comes in, they're telling you something that you don't understand, certain things financially with what they're asking for. You seek advice from them. So I think what I want to ask is, how can we get the accountants to say, just like we have to develop that relationship with the bank, how do we make the accountants more dateable?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I would say, like anything else, or to use your analogy, you know, you work your way up to that stage, then you get a bit friendly with them. You know, maybe try to, to be in compliance, like try to break your yearly cycle up. Instead of going to them, you know, a month before taxes is due, try to maybe have quarterly updates with them and just, you know, be like, hey, you know, taxes are in April. I'm thinking about purchasing a piece of equipment in January. We're in October. You know, here's my financials now. And, you know, can you walk me through what I should be doing, like how I should be managing this before I go to the bank and ask them for funds to finance that new equipment purchase, right? And I mean, I would love if you consider your bankers your friends too. And I do know that a lot of banks, they do have like business development departments and personal banking departments where, you know, like you said, if you have a relationship with your bank, and it just goes back to tying nicely everything we said, you know, they are there to advise you as well, you know, like they're not trying to get you to operate a certain way because they want you to do that. They're trying to put you in a position to make you better off.
But we still believe that the bank is only trying to take my money so that they could invest in bigger markets and make more money. They don't actually care about my money. They just want me to take their money so that they can charge me more money, so that they can invest in bigger markets and put my money at risk. That is honestly something I've heard several times about why people don't trust banks, or why they don't want to go to the banks, or they feel that the bank does not benefit them.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. And I mean, I didn't know much of that. I mean, some of it, yes. But first off, it's important to know that any commercial bank in Guyana, they have a license to operate, right, from the Bank of Guyana. And within that regulation, it's important for everyone to know that your savings or checkings account with the bank is insured by the Bank of Guyana or the government of Guyana. So, you know, us having that money there is not, you're not risking your money by having it at the bank. And, you know, how banks work, like the reason for banks is so that we take a deposit from individuals so that we can lend it out to other individuals. It's a flow of money, right? And that is why we are so stringent and we ask for, you know, everyone says all these things, is because we are, in a sense, protecting your money that you're leaving with us in deposits. I think that's an important point for, you know, people to understand. One, you know, it's insured. And yeah, like we invest in other businesses by, in terms of loans, that's us investing in certain businesses. But your money is safe. It is insured. It is safe. And don't quote me on the exact statistic, but most banks in Guyana have what we call a loan to deposit ratio. Let's just ballpark it at about 45 to 49%. Let's just say half, meaning that for every $100 of deposit that we receive, we're only lending out $50, right? It's not like we're trying to get all your money and lend all of it out. There are regulatory minimums to ensure that we can do that. And if I can also argue that in Guyana, it's probably a little bit more safer, because in any other international market with a bigger bank, I think that regulatory minimum is closer to 7 to 10%. So we're actually, you know, a lot more conservative in Guyana with our discipline and lending practices.
Okay, so now there's also the narrative that if I'm employed, mm-hmm. whether it's at an entry-level position, middle management, high-up management, because of the fact that I'm employed or have been employed for about 3 years, which is the requirement at most banks, 2 to 3 years employment, I'm more likely to get a loan to buy a car, to build a house, or to generally go on vacation, study, anything like that, than I am to get a loan as a business owner. That's a general narrative that goes around and has been going around for a couple of years. So mm-hmm. what I'd like for you to explain is the difference in why you were more willing to take the risk for an employed person as against a business owner.
Well, it's not that we're, you know, favorably taking a risk or less risk for one or the other. Mm-hmm. It's more, you know, you look at, I'd say, like, certain aspects in an investment. You know, if your friend comes to you and asks you to, you know, lend me some money, and you're like, well, what are you going to do with that money, right? Part of it is that, and the other part of it is, like, you know, is this person, do they tick certain boxes that, you know, we can reasonably trust them to repay that money, right? And employed persons have stable income. I don't know the technical, like, if it's 2 years or 3 years, you know, it might vary depending on the bank or the type of loan or the amount of that facility or what's not, but it just goes back into stable income and, like, you having shown and proven that, you know, like, your income is X and your expenses are Y, and, you know, it's much more easier for me to, you know, stamp that loan or underwrite that loan to a person. And for the business side of it, it's kind of hard for me to explain that, just because we do look at every business individually. So there's not one broad stamp that really arcs everything and all types of business, but it do goes back to the same, you know, topics that we've been speaking about all evening, transparency, good financial statements, and timely payments. One thing that we didn't touch about was mixing your personal and business expenses together. So that's one big red flag that can really hurt you in that process too, because a lot of people tend to mix those expenses together sometimes, whether it hurts them just for the mismanagement of it or just, you know, not looking great on paper.
So that is why I asked the question too, because we wanted persons to understand that mm-hmm. the stability for a business owner comes from the relationship that you build with the bank, and mm-hmm. from the transparency of yep. your documents, from the preparedness that you have. Because what you don't have that an employed person has is stability. Mm-hmm. Your business could crash and burn. Your projections never lie. Goosey said it best. Projections never lie. Numbers always make it seem like the business is going to be profitable. But reality is something totally different yep. when you're in the business, because there are certain risks in the business. So maintaining that relationship, maintaining your documents, mm-hmm. becoming friends with your banker and your accountant, and seeking mm-hmm. advice both ways, that's how you now put yourself in a place of stability that increases your opportunity of getting a loan or mm-hmm. of getting the bank to back you when you have certain things going on, because they know you over the last couple of years. You've proven yourself. They've seen how you work. Even if things weren't good, you were honest with them. You showed them what was happening. So that's how you get the same benefits, I'd say, as an employed person, is from stability.
Yeah, and also savings, right?
Yes.
I mean, you don't have to pledge cash collateral, but, I mean, if you can show that, especially if you're with that bank for a long time, you can show that, hey, look, you can see that consistently I've been putting $10,000 a month each paycheck into this savings account. And, you know, it's been there. Or maybe they have a short-term lock-in or something. Like, those are also good indicators as well. You know, as we're on that topic, like, you know, like, savings is one thing, but then there's just, like, safely investing that money as an individual, as an employed person yourself. And, you know, one thing that I wanted to bring up is, like, the use of what we now have in Guyana, mutual funds. Have you ever had any experience with those?
I have not.
Ah, okay.
School me, please.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'd start off with this. I'd say that the average savings interest that you get on that you earn in Guyanese banks are actually less than 1%. And you don't have to be an economist or into finance to know that our inflation rate is probably more than that. I mean, I went to the market literally this morning with my mom, and I was just like, wow, I did not walk with enough cash for this, right? So there's one thing to have your money sitting and saving, but there's another thing where you should try to have that savings grow for you as well. And this is all to come around to say, well, again, shamelessly, you know, marketing our product at the Merchant Bank. We do have mutual funds. We are the only bank in Guyana, I believe, to offer mutual funds. And what these do is they give you diversification and a safe way to invest your savings. And you can invest them depending on the fund. And I like to encourage my friends to do this. Well, the Guyana Stock Exchange may only have a few companies compared to you know, Canada and the U.S. and stuff like that. We have very strong companies that everyone knows about that we see every day that are listed on that stock exchange. And with everything that's going on in Guyana and the increase of business and the increase of consumption, these companies are doing quite well. And you can be a part of that. The most common misconception is everyone thinks that, oh, I need a lot of money to invest, or I must be rich to invest in the stock market or to do things like that. And honestly, you don't. You can start with as little as $25,000, and you can watch that money grow. I mean, we can keep this for another segment, but I'll just say that, you know, if you look at go on our website and you look at our historical performance of our mutual funds and stuff like that, you can see that you can earn potentially, because with all investments, they are risk, and you know, past performance is not an indication of future performance, but
Correct. We
have made at least, you know, almost 5% if you've held it over a certain period of time, which is significantly more, 5 times more, in fact, of what a bank can offer you in just a savings account. So that is something that I do encourage Guyanese to take part of. And by, you know, practicing these, I won't say advanced, but these non-common sort of investing techniques in their everyday life, you know, that is one way of actually growing with the economy and with the times.
And it also puts you in that place where you say, boy, if I'd only invest 2 years ago, you know how much money I would get now?
I mean, yeah, it's true. Like, I, funny story, unknown to me, before I left for university, my dad had put a small sum, not even a big sum, like 50,000 Ghana dollars into, and I can't say, but like into one of the larger companies on the Guyanese stock market. And, you know, he forgot that he did. And he just recently told me when I came back, because he had the certificate there, and he's like, oh, yes, I bought this for you. And I kid you not, in the 14, 15 years I've been away, I've earned more than 3,000% on that.
Interesting.
And as a CARICOM resident, capital gains on stocks and these type of investments are tax-free, so is dividend income. So if you're a Guyanese and you're a CARICOM resident, these things are, it's a tax-free way of growing your money.
So we have something else to do with our money, whether we're employees or we are business owners who have been able to put something aside for savings. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to go back to the mixing up the money.
Hmm.
The money is we money, not my money, and then the business's money, mm-hmm. and what that can do to be harmful, because we may think that the bank is seeing that I'm spending the money and I have mm-hmm. to maintain myself and I have to do all of these things. But we do have categories of recording our expenses, and there are some things that the business business mm-hmm. spends on, but then we can tell that the business didn't spend on this. This was you.
Yeah.
Right. And one time I remembered a client of ours, and he had an incorporated company. He was not a sole trader.
Hmm.
But I think that's for a whole lot of episode. The different types of
finance. Yeah, right? Yeah. There's different
types.
The
different types of doing your taxes and recording your expenses when you're a sole trader and when you're a company. Mm-hmm. Because what he did was buy a car in his name, not the company's name. So when the accounts was done, And the accountant said, you owe the company $7 million. He was like, but it's my car. Yeah, your car, not the company's car. And you spent the company's money on your car. So how not detrimental, but why is it a bad habit to mix up your money?
Well, and to start from that example, depending on, obviously I don't know the situation and the regulation behind that, but in some territories that can be considered fraud, right? And that can come with serious legal consequences. But in general, yeah, you don't want to mix your personal spending up with the company spending, because again, as well, that trust, you don't want the bank to think, or the investor, or even on the accounting side, to think that, okay, well, this is one, the amount or the trajectory or the frequency or whatever the whatever it was on, you don't want it to conflate with the business history of spending, right? I always encourage for, you know, these things to be separate. Sometimes they can't. But when they do, like, you know, it should be moderate and it should be a true business expense. It's not, you know, my family coming in for dinner and, you know, I'll take them all out to, you know, Amici or Aiden and, like, you know, we'll spend on a big dinner and then write that off to, as a business expense, right? No, right? You need to be disciplined in order to do that, because, again, being ready for that investment, being ready to take that same business to the next level, and there's an opportunity that comes knocking and you want to, again, get some financing for that. When we look at your expenses, you may be qualified for a smaller amount because you have inflated what your expenses are, which tells me that you have less money to cover the debt service on that loan, right? So that actually might just work out in your favor. Sorry, against your favor, right?
And for the smaller businesses, a lot of times, persons think that I am just doing this business to take care of me and my expenses, and what I have is to send the children to school, is to pay, because, you know, things are hard in Guyana right now. Nobody got the time to deposit the money that come in for the business, then only spend it on the business, because how I gonna live,
mm-hmm.
right? So I take the money from the business and I'm taking care of me and my family. Understandable
yep.
that you have a life to live. How do they know, from the sole trader standpoint, because we do understand that GRA does not recognize a salary for a sole trader. Everything after expenses is considered profits,
mm-hmm.
right? So when you don't have business expenses because you used all of the money that came in for personal stuff to take care of your family and your life,
mm-hmm.
how does that affect you?
I mean, that's a very difficult situation. I think everyone understands the frustration of just doing simple banking in Guyana as well. And like you said, sometimes it will be a little bit challenging to separate that sort of, you know, business account expense in, or that, you know, keeping that, you know, that receivable in the business account versus my account and separating it. It's not easy. I mean, running a business is not easy. My advice, again, is that's where the accountants come in, right? Because there's so many ways that I don't even know about that you can help to separate those expenses. As a sole trader, and again, I can understand that certain cash businesses, it's just very easy to get lost in that. It's sometimes even easier to get separated. And like you said, without a sole trader being able to declare salary for himself, he has to pay himself from, I guess, the proceeds of his net profits,
yes.
right? And how would you know what your net profits are if you're not accounting, or if you're not keeping accounting, even if it's just your own notepad and notebook method? You need to, again, have a little bit of help in the financial literacy department and be able to at least estimate some of that for yourself, so that when you do file your taxes at the end of the year, and you've been at least trying to, let's say that you estimate that your net profit's going to be, you know, 20%, and you've budgeted and spent accordingly, and at the end of the year, if it's 25 or if it's 15, it's not a hindrance, or it's not far to readjust to make that correct, versus if you haven't been doing it at all. So it's all a little bit of, you know, practice, a little bit of, you know, putting a little bit more of your financial literacy to work, so that when you do file your taxes as a sole trader, at the end of the year, you wouldn't owe, let's say, $7 million. Maybe you might owe like $200,000, or vice versa. Maybe you gain, right? So I guess that would be my advice for that sort of situation.
You have to do it the right way, and see where it takes you, how the benefits add up in your favor eventually to position the business so that you can do more, then incorporate it, or you can then pay yourself a salary.
And you know, again, that's a whole other episode, the value of incorporating, but for a sole trader standpoint, and that like, as hard as it is and as costly that it might be, it's a bullet that you have to bite.
Yes. Now, we had a pre-conversation before the podcast started, and Jonathan said, I don't think we have enough content for an hour. We're past an hour. We have content for two other episodes.
We'll line those up.
Because finance is a big topic, and in the Caribbean region, not just in Guyana, from the sole trader startup business standpoint, until you really get into the mega operations, finance is usually seen as something that I am not big enough to do that as yet. I don't have to keep my books in order as yet. I don't really do that. I just sell a little hair up on the side. I sell my plant and chip. That's what I just do. So I don't need to do all of that. All of that for sell a little plant and chip, I don't understand. Right, so it's neglected until we want to expand the plant and chip stand into something else, and we realize, by how much plant and chip is even selling a day?
Yep.
Right, it is not until we get to that growth stage that we take finance as something important, because the bank told you you needed that, and now you upset with the bank because they're hindering your growth. But you were the one who were not prepared to go approach the bank because you didn't have your stuff in order. And now you have to deal with an inconvenience to get yourself ready. And we need to understand that it's not the size of the business that makes financial literacy important, but the size of the business that you want in 15, 20 years, or even past your debt.
Yep.
That is why from the foundational stage, finance is important. And that's why this conversation is important.
Yeah, and I think one of the easiest things anyone on the sole trader or getting into business can do, and I'm telling you, it's very easy. You know what that is? When you start your business, envision that you'll be, you know, all over the world or the Caribbean. Like, just don't set a limit for yourself. Don't say, you know, I'm only going to open this to, you know, provide for my, you know, for my kids to go to school, or just to pay my rent or something. Like, don't limit your horizons. Just have that end goal in mind that, you know, one day I could be all over Georgetown. I could be all over Guyana. And if you, I feel that if you have that positivity, and when you approach your business, you might be a little bit more willing to, you know, be open to, again, doing things the right way.
Yeah, setting up the foundation for a skyscraper rather than just a two-story house.
Exactly.
Yes. So, and as Luke said, at Regulations and Beyond, don't just be Guyanese, be global.
Yeah, exactly. And we are global right now. Yes. Like, we are on every news outlet every day. I have so many people, hey, is this where you're from? Like there's like all my previous coworkers, whenever they see news in Guyana, they're like, oh, like, were you there? Like we are on a global stage right now. And in the next, you know, 10 years, when we're going from, what are we, 850K barrels a day to, you know, much more than that, when in this evolutionary period, it is probably the best time for Guyanese to market themselves globally, because like, the attention is on us.
Yes.
Why would anyone not want to invest in certain companies when we're all over the news in positive lights?
Yes, so it is the time to get financial literacy. It is on YouTube, it is in books,
it's free
everywhere. It's free. Express will be bringing you content in the month of April and beyond. We have courses as well for financial literacy. We have one of the bigger accounting firms at our arm's length to put you in contact with, because I always say, we don't do the advisory services. We don't tell you anything about your numbers. When you contact us, we will set a meeting with the accountant. So you're getting the information from them first. All we ask is that you be honest with them and with us, right? So It was a pleasure having you on the Catalyst Effect.
It was great
and
being here.
It is a great conversation. We definitely have to continue it because we still need to speak about taxes and we still need to speak about incorporations and we still need to get more into the services that the merchant bank is offering because it's a different type of banking service as well to an extent that most Guyanese are not familiar with. I don't think a lot of them even know that the Guyana American Merchant Bank exists.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to end it off nicely that we, as I mentioned earlier, yes, we are a subsidiary of GBTI. We operate under separate financial licenses. And the main reason for that is because we are a non-deposit taking institution, which means that unlike a commercial bank, we don't take deposits. And our main, or we have two main business lines. The first is really raising capital for companies and projects. Yes, it is on the larger side because we tend to raise these capital, not just in Guyana, but from banks regionally and internationally. And our second business line is, from what I alluded to earlier, our mutual funds or brokerage accounts. So a typical Guyanese can come in and invest in our local stock market and, you know, buy a mutual fund and, you know, watch their money potentially grow. So, yes, if you haven't heard of the Merchant Bank, you know, I'm on the website, the number's up there. Please come ask away any questions you may have.
It was another great episode, this one on financial literacy, because April is the month of financial literacy. We learned so much, but we're just at the beginning. We ain't gone nowhere yet. I promise you, there is so much to learn. Now, as we go along, Express will be bringing you content relating to financial literacy for you business owners out there. It's never too late to learn. It's actually the perfect time to get started if you never taught about financial literacy, learning how money works so that you can develop your business the right way. This episode has been brought to you with the kind compliments of Aiden by Best Western, Express Business Solutions, the Rehab Center, Achazia Business Solutions Limited, Alpha Creations Media, Adam Lord Cinematography, Color Me Gorgeous, and AV's Beauty and Hair Salon. And we are just grateful that you stay tuned. Remember to like and subscribe The Catalyst Effect. Share it with friends, and this episode in particular, share it with everybody you know, because you don't have to be in business to understand how money works. Financial literacy is just as important as the air you breathe, because understanding how money works is critical. You don't want to do like many of us do, where we just work, earn, spend. Then when we get into financial trouble, then we're trying to blame everybody else except us. We need to get to that place where financial literacy, understanding how money works, comes first. They're never too young to learn. Bring them up as well. What you'd missed, ensure they're informed of it from a very early age so that the next generation are wealthier than we could even think about. Thank you for tuning in to The Catalyst Effect. We will be with you the next time for another great episode and look forward to seeing Jonathan again. He has lots of information to share.
We'll definitely be here.